Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Reggie McIntyre. I am the guest host, and this show is for the week of August 7th, 2017. Today, we are joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. D.R., how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Good, thank you. And we are pleased to be joined by Mariah Taird. Mariah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, D.R., we're continuing to march forward. What's the what do we get on the plate for this evening?
Interesting developments in Massachusetts, where the Supreme Judicial Court is going to determine whether ExxonMobil has to hand over its 40 years of records to Attorney General Maura Healey as part of the investigation into the Exxon New matter. Attorney General Maura Healey, much like New York City Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, trying to determine whether or not ExxonMobil committed fraud by being, shall we say, less than forthright in terms of what it knew about the impacts of climate change. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the Supreme Judicial Court comes down, and basically if in fact they rule that Exxon has to turn over its records, how long it will take for ExxonMobil to sort of pony up in terms of what they have.
Yeah. Is there some confusion around that with you? Can you kind of flesh that out? Or Mariah, did you have a particular question you wanted to ask relative to that?
Well, okay. So, you know, I looked into there were two reports. There's the Inside Climate report called Exxon, The Road Not Taken, and there's the Union of Concerned Scientists Climate Deception Dossiers. And both of these reports go back. They're award-winning, or at least the Inside News Climate News report for Exxon, The Road Not Taken. And they go back, they spend 8 months looking into Exxon and go back all the way to the 1970s. And it turns out that in the 1970s and 80s, Exxon was a very different company than they are now. And from this Inside Climate News story, essentially it sounded like Exxon was trying to be at the forefront of, dare I say, understanding climate change and moving us in a direction away from climate change. I don't know, that might be an overstatement, but they certainly wanted to do rigorous science to understand the phenomenon of climate change and how it might threaten its business, and then also to have an authoritative voice in future policy making. And then at some point, they really changed, right? But they do have, they had a whole research It was a research section, I guess. It's called Exxon Research and Engineering, and they put some of their research was put forth in a 1980 congressional hearing. They had peer-reviewed papers by Exxon scientists. They had a whole Exxon supertanker that was measuring carbon dioxide concentration. So they had put serious money into studying carbon emissions, and so that's fairly well established. Some of it's even in public record, right? So there is clear evidence that Exxon knew that carbon dioxide was a problem. And I guess I'm confused what case Exxon has against Maura Healey, and why is it, I guess I can speculate why they're so hesitant to turn over their information to her. But yeah, if you can shed some light, DR, there on why this can go to the Supreme Judicial Court.
From what I recall, Maura Healey was basically saying that because ExxonMobil did business in Massachusetts, ExxonMobil's alleged chicanery had a negative economic impact on Massachusetts and potentially ran afoul of Massachusetts' laws against fraud. So ExxonMobil is has been pushing back with various legal claims, and one of the suggestions by Exxon is that what they did and what they knew and what they did not know didn't constitute legal fraud. And every now and then, you know, when you watch stories about this whole Exxon New controversy on PBS, they'll bring out some legal expert raising questions about whether or not what ExxonMobil did was similar legally to what the tobacco industry did. And basically, you know, it gets into this whole discussion of what does or does not constitute illegal activity, and it'll be interesting to see how the Supreme Judicial Court figures it out one way or the other.
Well, right. It's the consumer protection law, right? That's she's saying that basically Exxon essentially lied to Massachusetts residents and delivered them different information than what they were getting. So essentially, we should know that every time we burn fossil fuels, we're polluting the air. That should be a disclaimer. It should be noted on the pump, right? I mean, I don't know if that maybe that's extreme again, but we should be informed that they know that it creates pollution, and so therefore they're informing us so that we are making those decisions versus being kind of misled in that way. And so that consumer protection law is what she's sort of saying. Look, this affects Massachusetts residents, and we've been misled. But again, you know, I've heard, from what I read, Exxon is sort of saying that she's biased because she's already made comments about that Exxon knows about climate change, and that's
go ahead.
They're basically saying that she and Schneiderman are biased because they were at a press conference with Al Gore back in, I think, March of 2016 to announce the pursuit of this investigation. And again, it's obvious nonsense, but presumably if you can get somebody gullible enough to buy it, they'll be in the clear.
Yeah.
But is the Supreme Judicial Court gullible enough to buy it? How did it get bumped up to them?
I think it was an appeal that Exxon appealed from a Superior Court judge, a state Superior Court judge in Massachusetts that initially made the ruling that Exxon had to turn over its records. And so Exxon appealed, and it's now up to the Supreme Judicial Court to make a decision.
Right.
Interesting. Well, you know what? Let's leave it there for right now. I think we've got enough out there for our listeners to wet their whistle, as it were, and see if they want to continue to do some more digging around on that particular issue. Then the other somewhat disheartening article we were going to take a look at, talk about the avoid the 5% chance of avoiding dangerous global warming. Talk to me about that. The Washington Post article.
Yes, there's a new the Washington Post article cited a new study that basically says that if we don't, you know, drastically change course within 3 years, we are going to basically hit the tipping point where it's essentially the point of no return, and we'll have unstoppable shifts in climate. This is a research that was published in Nature Climate Change. Involving scientists from the University of Washington, University of California, and Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
So it's fairly frightening, especially within the context of the controversial New York Magazine Uninhabitable Earth piece, and basically sort of puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It certainly does. Scary. Mariah, did you take a look at this article as well?
I missed that one. I'm
okay.
Looking forward to reading that, and we can certainly link it on our blog as well.
Oh, yes. Okay. And it just do we have any reason to hope, or what's the story here? What do you think?
Well, there's an interesting debate that this has sparked because as was the case with the New York Magazine piece, there are people who pointed out that, you know, this depends on whether or not we will summon the political will to sort of avoid this worst hazard. When you see these stories saying that we're about to hit the point of no return, the inherent assumption in these stories is that is that the world will do nothing, that the world won't do enough, that there will not be an uprising demanding, you know, curbs and emissions. And if there is such an uprising, if there is such a demand, maybe we will be able to avoid the worst. But of course, if we remain lazy, we'll all go crazy.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That is the bottom line. So, you know, so DR, it's these articles that I've read in Moriah as well, you know, I've noticed that they use the point of 1750, the time, that year 1750. That seems to be the starting point of the Industrial Revolution, and that's when, is that when the emissions to the environment got going? Talk to me about that. What do you know about that, so people have an understanding?
There are certain studies, from what I understand, saying that even slightly before we know as the Industrial Revolution, that's where we really started sort of befouling our atmosphere.
Yeah.
So the timeline of man-made impact on the climate began earlier, that's why we're, you know, closer to the edge than we initially thought. There's always been debate, always been discussions about, you know, whether or not the IPCC tones down how severe things are just because they don't want to scare the hell out of people. But we do need to face the reality. You don't want to encourage despair, but we do need to have a sober take on just how severe we are, just how close we are to the sort of the doomsday clock, midnight on the doomsday clock, so to speak.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
You know, and sort of on a hopeful note, I do feel like, and I maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I do feel like the GOP is starting to speak out against Trump and sort of starting to take a little bit of a, there's a lot of senators that's been sort of saying we disagree with that, not necessarily in regards to climate change, but just in general. And I read an article that there's maybe a little bit of hope with the new White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, one, that he's going to sort of impose some rules and structure around the White House that's been so chaotic, but also that he may mirror James Mattis, the Defense Secretary James Mattis, their close associates, and James Mattis is really views climate change, I believe, as a threat multiplier. I don't know if that's exactly his words, but a lot of military leaders have called climate change a threat multiplier. And so John Kelly, there's been talk that he hasn't come out, you know, on record one way or another for climate change, but he may very likely steer at least some resources towards helping to ameliorate some of the effects of climate change and potentially moving in that direction just from a national security standpoint.
Well, you know, that's a really, really good point, because I don't know when exactly the DOD came out saying that climate change is real, it is happening, and it's going to impact our bases, it's going to impact our, you know, certainly the Navy, and which is in complete juxtaposition to goofball Pruitt, you know, complete opposite. So that's a really, really good point, that maybe he'll be able to turn that ship around. That would be awesome. I mean, I think particularly like Norfolk Naval Base, you know, the largest base in the country, and that is right on the water. And then you look at Florida, and they have those sunny day, I mean, the sunny day floods, and it's going to remain to be seen. And like you said, DR, you know, one day you can be up with Trump, and the next day you can be down. So it's just a matter of time for with Pruitt, I suspect. You know, he seems to be kind of skating on. He's operating under the radar, but he's on the radar nonetheless. So. So anyway, very, very interesting. DR, do you have anything else you'd like to add relative to that or any of these other issues that we've talked about?
Well, speaking of things that can be done to sort of avoid dangerous climate change, there's an interesting juxtaposition of stories. One story in the New York Times talking about a utility in Vermont known as Green Mountain Power that is actually trying to help consumers get off the grid and to turn to energy saving grid equipment and turning to renewable sources of energy so they can generate their own energy, which obviously taxes the grid less if people are off the grid, and also has a positive impact on the climate. And contrasting that piece in WBUR about efforts by Eversource, the Eversource utility, to try to sabotage solar when solar is needed as much as possible to sort of, avoid the worst impacts. So it's interesting to see forward-thinking utilities in Vermont and backward-thinking utilities in Massachusetts.
Yes. Well, I read that article. They have I think it's brilliant, though. I mean, they have a small number of customers. What is it, like 265,000 customers? So I don't know if it doesn't sound small to me, but I suppose it is small in the big scheme of things. But just the idea of it, that they are, and that they have, that's the article that has the Tesla batteries that they're utilizing as well, right? So I just think that's fabulous. Very, very interesting. Very interesting. So, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. We just have run out of time, unfortunately, yet again. So I just want to share with our listeners that you can check out our links to most of what we have discussed here on our blog, here at our blog on www.massclimateaction.org/blog. And then you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/massclimateaction. And please share us if you have a chance, and then with other folks that you would know would be interested in what we're doing here, our mission. And then you can also listen directly to your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and other directories. And you can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. And we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the Newman administration not be accepted as normal, and that the U.S. puts a long-term and equitable price on carbon. Thanks for being here, DR, and thanks, Mariah, and everyone else for listening, and we will see you next week, and bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.